Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Hosts Gene and Tim, along with team members
Teresa, Linda, and Annie,
are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Green Counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hi, I'm Tim Kennelty.
And I'm Jean Thomas.
And welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Today's episode is a compilation of segments on everything you need to know about growing veggies.
So listen in to part two of the Veggie Patch with Teresa Golden.
Welcome back to the Veggie Patch. My name is Teresa Golden, a Master Gardener volunteer, and today let's talk about legumes. Legumes are grown agriculturally, primarily for human consumption, but also for livestock forage and as a cover crop to replenish nutrients in depleted soils. Well-known legumes include beans, soybeans, peas, chickpeas, peanuts, lentils, mesquite, carob, alfalfa, and clover. Beans are one of the easiest vegetables to grow. They can tolerate a fairly wide range of soils, so they can be grown in most home gardens. There are over 130 varieties of edible beans with pod colors ranging from green, yellow, and purple to red or streaked. Some of them are collectively known as snap beans. While green beans are exclusively green, yellow pod beans may be referred to as wax beans. Shapes range from skinny fillet types to a wide Romano type, and more common types in between. Beans grow typically as either bush or pole types. Bush beans are short plants growing to about 2 feet high, often without requiring any support. They tend to reach maturity and produce their fruit in a relatively short period of time. Pole beans have a climbing habit and produce a twisting vine, which must be supported by poles or trellises. They typically produce higher yields over a longer period and in less space than bush types. Half runner beans have both bush and pole characteristics. Their runners can be anywhere between 3 and 10 feet long. Plant beans in full sun after the danger of frost has passed. Make sure to follow the planting instructions for the variety you've chosen. Mulch the soil around the plants to retain moisture, but make sure that it is well drained. Beans have shallow roots, so the mulch keeps them cool. Water them regularly, about 2 inches per square foot per week, to keep them flowering. Note that excessive nitrogen will delay flowering, so don't over-fertilize. Make sure to weed diligently, but carefully, to avoid disturbing the shallow root systems. Harvest snap beans any time before the pods begin to toughen and the bean seeds begin to mature. They will be most tender when the small seeds inside is 1/4 the normal size. From this stage on, pods will become more fibrous and the beans starchier. Beans can be picked every 2 to 3 days, but only when the vines are dry to help prevent bean rust and the spread of other diseases. Picking beans often and regularly will help to lengthen the harvest period. Harvest lima, soy, and fava beans while the pods still have their attractive green color and are plump. Make sure they don't lose their gloss or turn yellow. Quality is best if they are eaten as soon as possible after being picked, since their sugars quickly turn to starch. To ensure a continuous harvest, you can plant snap beans every 2 to 3 weeks from the frost-free date until mid-July. Another common legume is a pea. Peas are one of the first crops planted and harvested in New York State. Three main types are grown in the home garden: English or garden peas, snap peas, and snow peas. Cultivars can be bushy and less than 3 feet tall or grow to over 5 feet tall. Considered a cool-weather crop, peas can be planted outdoors when the soil reaches a temperature of at least 40 degrees Fahrenheit, but warmer soils will speed germination. However, you can also plant or replant peas in July to yield a fall crop in September or October. The good news is that peas can handle a light frost. For the best yield, plant seeds 1 to 3 inches apart in soil with a pH of 6.0 to 7.5 that is well drained. There's no need to thin them if appropriately placed. Note the peas are very sensitive to excess soil moisture, so well-drained soil is key. Varieties under 3 feet tall can be grown without any support in rows 12 inches to 18 inches apart. For taller varieties, use a trellis or chicken wire to keep the vines upright to make them easy to pick and keep them off the ground. You can harvest them when the peas enlarge in pods. Note that weeds can quickly outcompete peas and are a special problem in late April and May plantings, so make sure to stay on top of your weeding. Adequate moisture is critical at pod fill, so make sure to water the garden as needed. Harvesting varies by type. For garden peas, harvest and shell them when the pods are plump and well filled, but before the seed becomes starchy. Pick snow peas when pods are large and flat, but before the seeds begin to enlarge. Snap peas should be harvested when the pods are succulent and the seeds are small. Remove strings from along the suture of the pod before cooking or eating. Once picked, they are best stored in the refrigerator in a vented plastic bag. Beans, peas, and other legumes can be considered either a vegetable or a protein food. They are an excellent source of protein and provide iron and zinc. They are low in fat and sodium and high in dietary fiber, potassium, magnesium, and the B vitamin. Grow legumes is an integral part of healthy eating. Thanks for listening to The Veggie Patch. Until next time, nature calls.
You're listening to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley.
Now it's time for The Veggie Patch. This is Teresa Golden, a Master Gardener volunteer from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties. And today we'll talk about tomatoes. One of the most common and beloved vegetable crops for gardeners, tomatoes require relatively little space, yet can yield 10 to 15 pounds of fruit per plant. There are so many varieties available today. So, how does one choose? Let's start with some basics. Determinate tomato plants grow to a certain height and then stop. They flower and set their fruit within a relatively short period of time. Indeterminate tomatoes continue to grow, flower, and set fruit until frost or disease kills them. These vines continue to grow throughout the season, so these varieties should be staked, caged, or pruned. The tomato fruit is 95% water, with the flavor determined by free sugars and acids, texture, and growing conditions. Select varieties have been bred to grow well in our regions. Think about how you will use a tomato. Are you looking for a large fruit for slicing? Medium-sized fruit to chop into salads and sauces? Smaller fruit for lunch boxes? Tomatoes for canning or juicing or drying? Also consider resistance to diseases, especially ones that are common in your area. Many gardeners don't raise their own tomatoes from seed and may be limited to those varieties offered by local garden centers. Read label descriptions and talk to fellow gardeners about which tomato varieties they prefer and why. One option might be to try 2 or 3 plants of a different tomato variety each year just for fun or experimentation. Tomatoes are well adapted to a range of soil types, but the soil pH should be in the 6.2 to 6.8 range, so make sure you get your soil tested. Because of their long growing season and temperature requirements, tomatoes tend to be started indoors 6 to 8 weeks before being moved permanently into the garden. When purchasing tomato seedlings, select stocky plants with thick, straight stems and bright green leaves. The ideal transplant is 6 to 10 inches tall, as broad as it is high. Avoid tall and lanky plants or large, well-established plants with flowers or fruits already visible. Tomato plants will flourish in well-drained sites that receive full sun for most of the day. Whether your plants are purchased or homegrown, harden off tomato seedlings before transplanting them into the garden. About 10 days before transplanting, set plants outside for a few hours each day to gradually acclimate them to outdoor conditions. Start by setting plants in filtered light in a setting protected from strong breezes. Each day, prolong the period the tomato seedlings spend outdoors, exposing them gradually to direct sunlight and wind. Remember that seedlings lose water much more rapidly outdoors than inside, and will need more frequent watering during the hardening off process. Bring plants indoors at night and on days when temperatures fall below 60 degrees Fahrenheit. Once the danger of frost has passed and soil temperatures have warmed to about 60 degrees Fahrenheit, you can plant your tomatoes into the garden. Around the Hudson Valley, this typically means waiting until around Memorial Day. The ideal spacing for tomato plants depends on the growth habit of the variety and whether the plants will be pruned. For staked or caged plants, 18 to 24 inches between plants should suffice. But if you don't stake them, allow 12 to 24 inches between determinate plants or 2 to 3 feet for indeterminate ones. When planting, dig a hole about twice the size of the tomato seedling and its root ball, setting the seedlings into the ground at the same level as it grew in the container. Please don't add Epsom salts to the soil unless soil testing shows a magnesium deficiency. Make sure to cover the root ball entirely. Set tomato plants in the ground so that only 2 to 3 sets of true leaves are exposed. Horizontal planting is an effective way to make plants stronger, especially leggy ones. Avoid setting the root ball deeply into cold soil. To reduce transplant shock, make sure to water them. If you plan to use stakes or cages, install them at planting time rather than late when the plant roots are visible. Where space is limited, tomatoes may be grown in containers. Although any large container will work if it provides adequate drainage, a general recommendation is to plant one tomato plant per 4 or 5 gallon container. Pay special attention to water and fertilizer needs, as container-grown tomato plants have no access to the deep soil reservoir of water and nutrients. Make sure your tomatoes get about 1 inch of water each week, either through rainfall or watering. Make sure to water the ground, not the leaves. Watering in the morning is preferable so the water can be absorbed during the day, as tomatoes tend not to like wet feet. An even moisture supply throughout the time the fruit is developing helps prevent a condition called blossom end rot, as well as to supply the water needed to develop the fruit. Too much water at any one time may cause ripening fruit to split. Pruning or selectively removing some of the tomato plant growth can improve airflow, enhance yields, and prolong the harvest season. It can also help reduce some disease problems. The ideal pruning system depends on whether the tomato is a determinate or an indeterminate variety. Mulching the base of the tomato plant helps to reduce soil moisture, raise soil temperatures during the early part of the season, suppress weeds, and help stabilize soil temperatures throughout the summer. Tomatoes can be mulched with a thick organic mulch of straw, pine needles, leaves, and spread 2 to 4 inches deep around the plants. Because organic matter delays soil warming, wait until the soil is thoroughly warm before applying these mulches. The ultimate growth condition for tomatoes is a mean daily temperature of 70 to 75 degrees. Growth stops below 50 degrees. Flowers and fruit may drop when day temperatures exceed 90 degrees. And night temperatures are greater than 75. Some gardeners use high tunnels to keep the plants under cover and thus keep the leaves dry, which reduces diseases that are very common problems, such as early blight and septorial leaf spot. Growing tomatoes under cover can also increase crop yields and quality while allowing you to work in the crop in inclement weather. Common insect pests on tomatoes include Colorado potato beetle, potato aphids, and stink bugs. Colorado potato beetle adults and larvae feed on leaves, stems, and fruit. Using floating row covers can help protect new transplants from this insect during their first 2 or 3 weeks of growth. Cutworms are soil-dwelling caterpillars that feed on stems at or just below the soil level, essentially cutting off a transplant at the base. If this is a problem in your garden, this damage can be prevented using a protective collar around each newly set transplant. Potato aphids cause damage by sucking plant juices and excreting a sticky honeydew, resulting in blemishes or cloudy spots on the surface of tomatoes and shallow, corky areas in the flesh. Hornworms are a very large green caterpillar that blend in with plants and feed on the foliage, sometimes the fruit of the tomatoes. They can be easily managed by hand removal. Anthracnose, septorial leaf spot, early blight, and late blight are all fungal diseases of tomatoes. The fungi that cause septorial leaf spot and early blight overwinter on plant debris in the soil. Both are common causes of spots on tomato leaves, with symptoms usually beginning on the lower leaves. Septoria leaf spot is usually more severe because it can eventually cause the plants to be defoliated. Late blight does not overwinter in our soils and arrives via storms each year, usually late in the season. Although it does not cause leaf spots, it does blight leaves, stems, and fruit and kill plants very quickly. If you suspect fungal diseases are affecting your tomato crop, it's important to identify the disease to manage the disease effectively. Your local cooperative extension office can help to identify problems, rotating your crops, providing good air circulation, removing fallen leaves and fruit debris, mulching, and properly cleaning garden tools and supports can help to minimize these diseases. Assuming you've successfully managed these various pests and diseases, tomatoes can be harvested primarily between the pink and ripe stages. Light is not necessary to complete the ripening process, but don't store them in the refrigerator. Rather, allow them to ripen fully indoors at room temperature. Enjoy watching your tomatoes grow and enjoy the delicious harvest. Thanks for listening to The Veggie Patch. Until next time, Nature Calls.
You're listening to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley.
And now it's time for The Veggie Patch. I'm Teresa Golden, a Master Gardener Volunteer for Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties. Today, let's talk about the food group that is most used for human consumption. Want to guess what it is? Cucurbits. Despite the strange name, the common members of this family include such things as cucumbers, pumpkins, summer and winter squash, watermelons, and muskmelons. They can easily be identified by their bright yellow flowers. Each vine produces both a male and female flower. Cucurbits grow best in summer when days and nights are consistently warm. They do need full sun and well-drained soil. For best results, consider adding organic matter before you plant them. Cucumbers are a home garden favorite. There's nothing like the crunch of a fresh cucumber right off the vine. You can grow either the slicing cucumbers that are typically 5 to 8 inches long, or the pickling ones. They tend to be about 2 to 3 inches long. The pickling ones are smaller and mature faster than the slicing varieties. Both types are available as bushes or vines. Bush varieties take up less space and are ideal for containers. The vine type can be trained to climb up a support, or you can just let them sprawl on the ground. To train vine varieties, space plants at least 1 foot apart in front of an anchor trellis. When they are about 2 feet tall, their tendrils will start to attach to the structure and the plant will climb up about 6 to 8 feet. Vines on a support tend to produce a higher yield as well as straighter and longer cucumbers. From a yield perspective, you can expect to get an average of 15 cucumbers per plant. So plan accordingly so you don't end up inundating your friends and family. Cucumbers like full sun, good air circulation, and soil that is well-drained and rich in organic matter. They are easy to direct sow in the garden, but you can also start them indoors about 8 to 10 weeks before the last frost date. Repot the seedlings into 3-inch pots when they are 3 to 4 inches tall and have 2 sets of leaves. If you prefer the ease of buying seedlings, make sure to buy stocky plants with shiny green leaves and no flowers. Home-grown or purchased seedlings can be transported in the garden when the soil temperature exceeds 60 degrees, so you might have to wait a few weeks after the last frost date. Allow at least 12 inches between plants. Handle the transplants gently to minimize disturbance to the roots. It does help to spread a 3 to 5 inch layer of mulch under a 6-inch tall seedling to help with weed control and water retention. Make sure to always keep the soil moist, but avoid working with the vines when the leaves are wet. You're better off waiting until the morning dew or rain has evaporated to prevent the spread of diseases. Harvest the fruit regularly to keep the plant producing. If ripe fruit is left on the plant too long, it signals to the plant to stop producing new flowers and thus new cucumbers. A poor yield is usually due to a lack of water or too little fertilizer. Bitterness in cucumbers can be caused by high temperatures or drought or by picking overripe fruit. Cucumber beetles are a common pest. They are striped or spotted, greenish-yellow insects that feed on young leaves. Covering plants with row covers and using mulch can help to deter them from breeding. Squash, another member of the cucurbit family, is also one of the most bountiful vegetables you can grow. It can be found in multiple varieties and shapes. Examples include zucchini and pumpkin, as well as yellow, acorn, spaghetti, or butternut squashes, among others. Summer and winter varieties have different characteristics. Planting and growing requirements, however, are similar except for the time to maturity. Summer squash is native to North America, where it was planted by Native Americans as a companion to corn and beans in a trio known as the Three Sisters. Each plant in the trio benefited each other. The corn provided support for climbing beans, while the beans fixed nitrogen in the soil, and the large bushy leaves of the squash acted as a living mulch, cooling the soil and helping it to retain moisture. The prickly squash leaves also help to deter unwanted garden pests such as raccoons, deer, and rabbits. If you're interested in growing the Three Sisters, bush type of summer squash are preferable as opposed to the vining and sprawling types. Summer squash typically requires 50 to 65 frost-free days to mature. They are harvested when the rinds are soft and edible, and when the fruit is, quote, immature. They can be eaten raw or cooked. By contrast, winter squash takes 60 to 100 days to mature, and it's harvested when the rinds are hard and thick. As a result, they have a longer storage life. They also tend to be drier and more fibrous than summer squashes and must be cooked. Like cucumbers, both summer and winter squash grow best once air temperature averages 65 degrees. Squash seeds can be sown directly in the ground at least a week after your last frost date, or you can purchase seedlings or consider starting them indoors. This should be done 2 weeks to a month before your last spring frost. Transplants are often planted on slight mounds or hills, sow 2 to 3 seeds per hill, 3 to 4 inches deep, and placed 4 to 6 feet apart. Squash requires regular and even watering. Keep the soil moist, but avoid watering the leaves. Squash blossoms are edible, so feel free to pick the first blossoms that appear. Remove the inner parts and use the petals to add color to appetizers or salads. Harvesting the first flowers doesn't hurt the plant production at all, because the early flowers bear pollen and no fruit. These veggies grow quickly in warm weather, so check your garden regularly, as you could be picking them 2 to 3 times a week. Plenty to eat, freeze, and give away to neighbors. Just remember that the larger summer squash gets, the tougher the skin and seeds are. Larger squash is great for baking, so don't despair if you miss one. Allow winter squash to mature on the vine, but harvest them when their skins are hard, but before the first frost. After harvest, winter squash should be allowed to cure outdoors and dry and toughen the skins before storage in a cool, dry, ventilated area for up to 5 to 6 months. Vine borers often injure these plants. Prevention is the best defense against them. Use floating row covers until the flowers start to bloom is one approach. Other conditions such as bacterial wilt, mosaic virus, powdery mildew, and blight can also affect squash. Make sure to clean up any plant debris at the end of the season and turn the soil in the spring to bury insect pupae to help control these issues. Enjoy experimenting with the wide range of cucurbits that are available to grow. Until next time, this is Teresa Golden with the Veggie Patch.
That concludes another episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We would like to thank Sandra Powers and Devin Connolly from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties for production support. And a special thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. You can find links to any of the topics mentioned in this episode at our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org. Comments and suggestions for future topics may be directed to us at columbiagreenmgb@cornell.edu or on the CCE Master Gardener Volunteers of Columbia and Greene Counties Facebook page. For more information about Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties, visit our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org or visit us in Hudson or in Acre. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal programming and employment opportunities.